USA Radio Network News.
Denzel Washington for the Boys and Girls Clubs.
In my hand, I'm holding a 2-inch by 3-inch piece of paper that has changed the lives of millions of young people. It's kept them off drugs, out of gangs, and in school. Now, what could be that powerful and still fit in the palm of my hand? A membership card from the Boys and Girls Clubs. Every day, another 300 kids will join clubs all across the country. That's 300 kids who will be picking up a membership card instead of a gun or a needle or a knife. You know, too many people feel like they can't make a difference, but I'm telling you this. Put this card in the hands of a child, and you will change that child's life. Do that, and you can change the world. It's up to all of us. Support a program that works. The Boys and Girls Clubs, the positive place for kids.
For more information and to find out how you can support the Boys and Girls Clubs, call 1-800-854-CLUB. That's 1-800-854-CLUB.
Thank you for listening to the TalkStar Radio Network. For the finest and informative and interactive talk radio programming, it's the TalkStar Radio Network, available live via your local radio station and on the Internet at TalkStarRadio.com. Your feedback is important to us. Email us at TalkStarRadio.com.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. We had some pretty big news over the weekend. The Chief Justice of the United States, one of the longest serving in history, and the longest serving justice, who had been on the court for 35 years, died. Of course, that was Chief Justice William Rehnquist. And it would have been huge news. It would have been all over the main news channels, MSNBC, CNN, the Fox Propaganda Network, if we hadn't had bigger news at the same time. The greatest catastrophe in this presidency, arguably in this, well, in the last 100 years, occurred. Of course, I'm talking about Hurricane Katrina. And by the way, when I say that I'm including 9/11, I think the deluge of New Orleans will end up being more deadly, more costly, more horrible, more preventable even than September 11th. But I'm not here to talk today about New Orleans. We will do plenty of that on Sunday and in the future. I want to talk about Chief Justice Rehnquist. And not even so much about Judge John Roberts, who Bush has appointed to replace Chief Justice Rehnquist. He's moved the appointment, which was going to be replacing Sandra Day O'Connor, who has said that she will retire upon the appointment of her successor, the successful nomination of her successor to the bench. George Bush, of course, moved the Chief Justice seat to John Roberts, which my sources tell me is frankly what he planned to do to begin with, because everyone knew that Rehnquist was sick. But again, my focus is not Roberts. We will have plenty of time to discuss John Roberts. There will be extensive hearings on him, and you can bet I'll be playing a lot of them for you and discussing them on the air. Now, I want to take the next hour and talk about Chief Justice Rehnquist. Before his legacy is laid to rest, I think we should know who this man was, particularly as John Roberts was a clerk to Chief Justice Rehnquist. And if you know anything about the Supreme Court, you know that, guess what? The judges don't write the opinions. You may not realize that. We lawyers know it's the case. The clerks write the opinions. Certainly the justices give their opinions as to which way the decision should go. And certainly, I'm sure, they exercise a large amount of influence, although I'm sure it's large or small, depending on the justice, in determining what exactly it is that their clerks write. But since the clerks write the opinions, and since Roberts was trained under Chief Justice Rehnquist, I think it's very important for us to recognize who Chief Justice Rehnquist was. And so I want to spend the next hour talking about the jurisprudence, or if you will, the legal thinking, the judicial thinking of our former Chief Justice. Chief Justice Rehnquist was someone who very much wanted to restrict equal protection under the law. He did not believe equal protection, even though it's in the Constitution as the 14th Amendment, was something that should be widespread. In 1964, before he came on the court in 1971, he argued against a ban on racial discrimination in public housing in Arizona. He felt that public housing officials should have the liberty, as he put it, to discriminate, to say whites live here and blacks live there, and that it was unconstitutional to try to prohibit that liberty to discriminate. Indeed, when Brown versus Board of Education came to the fore, the landmark 1954 decision banning desegregation in public schools, Rehnquist was himself a clerk to Justice Jackson, and he wrote defending the existing law, Plessy v. Ferguson, the law of 1896. I'm going to give you a lot more details of all of this. I'm even going to play some of the hearings in 1986 where Justice Rehnquist was accused by several witnesses of intimidating voters, particularly black voters, to try to prevent them from voting. So I will definitely go into this in more detail. Let me give the broad brush if I can. Rehnquist was against equal protection applications if it was used to prevent discrimination against black people, aged people, disabled people, women, gay people. But he did believe that equal protection should be used when trying to stop a state from determining that Al Gore could win the election. That would be the one exception in his jurisprudence. He hated economic legislation that would help workers, things like labor unions, Social Security, child labor laws, environmental protection, disability laws, overtime, that kind of thing. But he supported economic legislation where it would help corporations. For example, even though there's nothing in the Constitution to back this up, he believed in limiting punitive damages against corporations. He believed in limiting political free speech. For example, he thought it was perfectly fine to ban the burning of a flag, but you couldn't limit corporate free speech in the sense that he felt that commercials, for example, could say anything they wanted. You could even have free rein in promoting a substance like tobacco, which kills 400,000 a year. The fact that one-third of all tobacco users are murdered by the substance didn't restrict corporate free speech. No, corporations, Rehnquist believed, should have more power than even your ordinary political free speech. He believed in supporting the power of the president, supporting states' rights, again with the exception of Bush v. Gore. He believed that government could not help you in your public life, but had every right to invade your privacy and even to tell you how to have sex. He felt that there should be no separation of church and state. Government should be able to instill religion. And he believed very much in limiting the rights of criminal defendants. Even if DNA shows them to be innocent, once you've had your trial, it doesn't matter whether you're actually innocent or not. You do have to serve your term. This is just a bit of Chief Justice's jurisprudence. We'll be discussing more after the break. If you want to call in, 877-528-TALK.
Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, one of the best shows television ever offered. Now you can travel again with Marlon Perkins to the farthest reaches of the globe and study wild animals in their natural habitats. The Emmy Award-winning Wild Kingdom, now available on DVD. Order online at RetroTelevision.com and get 20 full-length episodes for $29.99. You'll see gorillas, elephants, giraffes, zebras, hippos, and more. Also memorable, three episodes featuring legendary primate researcher Diana Fossey from Gorillas in the Mist. 20 episodes of Wild Kingdom on DVD for $29.99. Go to RetroTelevision.com or, if you forget, log on to www.TalkStarRadio.com and check out our video store. Save $10 on Wild Kingdom now at RetroTelevision.com.
Dear Mama, my first 5 years, I'll learn a lot.
How to walk, talk, brush my teeth. But for food, I'm pretty much counting on you.
I don't know what's good for me.
I can't use the stove, drive to the store. It's up to you.
So if you need help, there's WIC.
WIC, Women, Infants, Children.
They'll tell you what's good for me, even provide food. Because what I eat my first 5 years will affect me the rest of my life.
Love always,
your child.
Get proper nutrition before it's too late. Call or visit WIC. WIC provides nutrition information, healthcare referrals, even food for women, infants, children. To find out more about WIC, our nearest location, or if you qualify for our benefits, call 1-866-WIC-INFO.
P.S. It doesn't cost anything.
Your child has you, and you have WIC. Brought to you by the National WIC Association and the Ag Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the legacy of Chief Justice Rehnquist. Justice Scalia has argued that he's consistent. He's not, but he argues he's consistent and that he's a strict constructionist. And there are those that say that the conservatives support strict constructionism, only applying the law according to the Constitution. They claim they are not judicial activists. Well, if so, they must not like Chief Justice Rehnquist, who was one of the most activist judges of modern times. Indeed, between 1937 and 1995, not a single law was struck down, a single congressional law was struck down on the grounds that Congress did not have authority to regulate interstate commerce. But there have been several since the Rehnquist Revolution, if you will, of 1995. He believed in striking down laws far more often than the liberal justices did. So let's put aside this notion that Rehnquist or any other judge applied the law. I think I can make that argument with some justices, but it's clear that Rehnquist relished his inconsistencies. As I said, he believed that corporations have more rights to free speech than individuals. He believed that equal protection of the law cannot protect the descendants of slaves, but can protect the right of George Bush to go into office when a Florida court says that indeed all the votes have to be counted. He was nothing if not a man of contradictions. Indeed, some of us believe that the whole purpose of a court having to give reasons and not just counting votes 5-4 is so that we understand the law. We understand where things are going. You know, a court is different from a president or legislature. President or legislature can just pass laws, not the court. The court is required to persuade us that those laws are good, that those laws are necessary. That's why they write opinions. They can't just say, I want the law to be this way. They have to explain why they think the law to be this way. Well, Chief Justice Rehnquist felt that the requirement of the courts to justify their decisions was outmoded. It was archaic. His belief was, count up the votes, and if you have 5-4, you win. And it doesn't matter if there's any logic or rationale. Indeed, what he would do in his internal conferences is, instead of the old practice of letting each judge from seniority explain their vote and why they wanted to vote the way they do and to discuss each judge's vote as they went down the list, Rehnquist believed that each judge should give their vote first and discuss their reasoning and their challenges, other justices' challenges to it later. And if you think about it, you can understand why. When you're in a room, this is true, by the way, in a jury room, where they specifically tell jurors, don't state your position too early, because when you state your position early in a debate, you often feel inclined to defend it, and you often are not inclined to change your mind. That's, in fact, why judges instruct juries, don't rush in making a deliberation to quickly take a vote, but discuss the case first, and then come by process of deliberation to a vote, to a decision. Now, one would think that the Supreme Court of the United States would have at least as much deliberative powers as a simple jury of ordinary citizens, but Chief Rehnquist didn't believe that. He felt that deliberations were a waste of time. He felt that justices rarely, if ever, convinced each other. He wanted to get the votes in, get it out of the way, and there wasn't to be spent time on oral conferences. They could write memos to each other. And so he very much, in his opinions, reflects his view. You'll see very little even attempt at persuasion. Most Rehnquist opinions are very flat. They don't cite much law. They don't cite much reasoning. It's much more what we say in the law, to use the Latin phrase, ipsa dixit. It's because I say so. And Chief Justice Rehnquist was very much a because I say so kind of judge. In fact, the joke on the court was, if you want to know how Rehnquist is going to rule, don't look at the facts. Just know who the parties are. If it's president versus Congress and it's a Republican president, the president will win. If it's a Democratic president, Congress will win. If it's the state against a criminal defendant, the criminal defendant will lose. If it's a question of a corporation versus an individual, the individual will lose. If it's a case of discrimination, the person alleging discrimination will lose. Rehnquist was nothing if not consistent. And when we come back, what I want to do is I want to play for you the hearing of Justice Rehnquist when he became Chief Justice. Now, he became Justice in 1971 under Nixon, and he was appointed to Chief Justice in 1986 under Reagan. And at that time, Senator Ted Kennedy had some pretty tough questions for him on his earlier practice of voter intimidation. And I think it's very important for you to hear not just Rehnquist's denials, and he does deny that he did any of this, but also the testimony of the witnesses as to what Rehnquist is said to have done. Because Rehnquist, if you believe these witnesses, was one of the old-time racists. He was someone who, let's just say, lived at a time when you could be much more openly racist than you are now. And it's very interesting to explore, particularly when you look again at Roberts as his clerk. And I think it's very important to ask Judge Roberts, when he has his nomination hearings, whether he still, I shouldn't say still, whether or not he does support the ideals of his old boss, Chief Justice Rehnquist. And we'll get back to those hearings and your calls, 877-528-8255, right after this.
There are a lot of people out there making claims of miracle cures for this or that, but they're usually anonymous. Margie Garrison, who they call the Arthritis Lady, gives you her name and tells you her story. In July 1979, Margie was amazed when her doctor uttered the words, "Arthritis is the easiest disease there is to cure." What a difference from what she'd heard for 43 years, that there was no cure for arthritis. We don't have time here, but to learn the secret Margie learned, get to a computer and log on to HealthStarProducts.com. It's guaranteed or your money back, and you have a full year to decide. Look it up for yourself online at HealthStarProducts.com. HealthStar, H-E-A-L-T-H, HealthStarProducts.com.
Do you sell dietary supplements? If so, you may know that the Food and Drug Administration and the Federal Trade Commission regulate your sales presentations. Violation of the federal rules can lead to stiff penalties. You really must know the law. Fortunately, help is just a phone call away. Law Talk Incorporated has produced a CD series, 4-CD interviews with renowned attorney Jonathan W. Emord that explain the legal limits on sales presentations. The CD series guides you through FDA and FTC regulation, explaining the law that governs sales presentations, website content, and health claims, as well as global restrictions on supplement sales. This is a must-buy for network marketers and supplement companies alike. To obtain the CD series, call 1-888-RU-FREE-1. 1-888-RU-FREE-1. That's 1-888-783-7331. Call today.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the legacy of Chief Justice Rehnquist. And I want to play for you now the nomination hearing of William Rehnquist to be Chief Justice. He was chosen to be Justice in 1971 by Richard Nixon, but chosen to be Chief Justice in 1986. And one of the best ways, of course, to figure out how a judge is going to act is to examine how he or she acts prior to being nominated. And so it's important to understand the role of William Rehnquist. He became politically active in 1964, working for Republican Barry Goldwater in the last Democratic landslide, really, we've had, where Lyndon Johnson won virtually every state except, guess what, Arizona, where Chief Justice Rehnquist, then William Rehnquist, worked as part of the Republican ballot security program. And I want to play for you some of Ted Kennedy's comments to Justice Rehnquist in his 1986 hearing regarding this security program. The person talking is Ted Kennedy, and he's talking about witnesses who have testified against William Rehnquist.
Several witnesses have come forward, made statements about your activity as a leader in the Republican ballot security program in Phoenix, in Arizona, in the early 1960s. We'll hear, as I understand it, at least it's been requested, we hear from Mr. Pine, Charlie Pine, describe your activities at Bethune Precinct in 1962 or 64 as follows. I saw him then. I saw him there, and I saw him approach at least one voter. If my memory is correct, two. He asked them. He said, "Pardon me, are you a qualified voter to this black gentleman?" The man said, "Yes." And he said, "Do you have any credentials to indicate that you are?" And the man said, "No." And he said, "Well, then perhaps there's a question of whether or not you're qualified." And the man, instead of standing in line, if he had advanced, by that time he got to the voting table, he would have found his name on the voting list. But he turned on his heels and left the voting precinct. I felt that the whole purpose of that was to discourage blacks from voting. Do you know Mr. Pine, Charlie Pine?
I don't believe so, Senator. It's been a long time, some 20 years ago, but the name does not presently ring a bell.
Do you know any reason why he might make that statement?
Since I don't know him, I certainly don't know any reason why he would make that statement.
Just to go over the facts of the statement, just so we're clear what's happening here, the claim is that Charlie Pine witnessed Rehnquist talk to a black man standing in line in Arizona and asking him whether he basically had proof of his right to vote on him. Now, the proof was right up there when the black gentleman got to the front of the line. He could have seen his name. He could have verified that he was who he said he was. He could have signed in. But the black man apparently being tricked by William Rehnquist into thinking that he needed a form of a positive identification on him other than his affidavit under penalty of perjury, which is what's required in most states and certainly was at that time required, simply that he is the person he says he was. He thought he needed some kind of positive ID, and he turned around and left, and thus the black man did not exercise his right to vote. Just very important to understand the allegation here. Rehnquist denies all of these things. He denies all of these things, but listen to the different witness complaints. I'm going to play some more of them for you.
Mr. Quincy Hopper has stated that he was at the Bethune School on Election Day in 1964 and that you were there at the school having voters read from the Constitution to test for literacy. Do you know of Mr. Quincy Hopper?
No, I don't, Senator.
Do you know any reason why Quincy Hopper would make that statement?
No, I don't.
Okay, now this is an old technique, again, often used in the 60s. What they would do is that even after the Civil War, blacks had a technical legal right to vote, they would find other ways to prevent blacks from voting. And one of the most common was literacy tests. What they would do is they would ask black people to, say, read the Constitution. And if they didn't read it carefully enough, they would say, "I'm sorry, you don't have the right to vote." Or even if they did read it and they read principles in the Constitution like habeas corpus and ex post facto and bill of attainder laws, which we lawyers know what they mean, but most non-lawyers don't, they would say, "What is an ex post facto law? What is habeas corpus?" And if the black person didn't know what it meant, they'd say, "I'm sorry, you can't vote." Those literacy tests were later ruled unconstitutional by the court. So the question is not whether Rehnquist acted illegally or not, but I think the challenge is that he certainly acted unethically. Now, as I said, Rehnquist denies this witness account as well. Let's hear some others.
Reverend Benjamin Brooks, who's the pastor of the Southminster Presbyterian Church, has stated that he's familiar with you. He saw you at the Julian Precinct, where Pastor Brooks was an inspector on Election Day, the year that Paul Fannin and Paul Morrison were running for Arizona governor. And Reverend Brooks stated that on that day you challenged black, elderly, working-class voters for literacy by having them read the Constitution out loud. Do you know Reverend Brooks?
I don't believe so, Senator, no. As I say, does he say the year that Bob Morrison was running against Paul Fannin?
Yes.
Well, that would have been 1958, I think, which would be 28 years ago. No, I don't really think I do.
Dr. Sidney Smith, who was a psychology professor at Arizona State University from 1947 to 64, stated that he served as a poll watcher in the early 60s. Dr. Smith states that on Election Day in 1960 or 62, as a poll watcher at Southwestern Phoenix Poll, and observed you arrive with two or three other men. He says he recognized you from political functions and is positive of his identification. Dr. Smith states that you approached a group of voters holding a card in your hand and said, "You can't read, can you? You don't belong here." Dr. Smith says the voters were intimidated by your actions, you know.
We're going to be playing more of this testimony, but you heard the allegation. Witness says that Rehnquist said that you can't read, can you? Then you can't vote. We'll talk about the significance of that when we come back. If you want to call in, 877-528-TALK. We'll be right back.
This is Newsbreak. Hurricane Ophelia is sitting in the Atlantic, 70 miles east-northeast of Cape Canaveral, Florida. So far, it hasn't moved much, and forecasters say they can't predict where it will go when it starts to move. The U.S. House has approved a nearly $52 billion relief package for the Gulf Coast regions devastated by Hurricane Katrina. Senate approval is expected tonight or tomorrow. Health officials in New Orleans are urging anyone who comes into any type of contact with the highly contaminated water to decontaminate afterward. Rescue crews going door-to-door in New Orleans strongly urging residents to evacuate. So far, they've not attempted to force anyone to do so. On Wall Street today, the Dow was down 38 points to 10,596. NASDAQ lost 6 to 2,166. You'll find a link to a list of Hurricane Katrina relief resources and more news at usaradio.com.
If you're single, I'd like you to try something. Find three friends or family members and ask them about eHarmony.com. Chances are, you or they know someone that has fallen in love on eHarmony. You might even know one of the thousands that has been married as a result of being matched on eHarmony.
I had some friends who had experienced it, and so I thought, why not give it a shot?
I had a friend of mine say, why don't you give eHarmony a try?
My younger son said, come on, Mom, just try it. What do you have to lose?
Friends and family can be powerful allies when it comes to helping you find the love of your life. So if you're single and curious about eHarmony, ask a friend about us. Or better yet, log on to eHarmony and see for yourself why eHarmony has become the number one relationship site. Do it today and you'll get your $40 personality profile absolutely free. eHarmony.com.
This will be an everlasting love for me.
I'm Terry Graydon with our daily update from the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network. A study in The Lancet shows that a relatively new blood pressure drug is actually better than the old standby for preventing deaths from heart attacks and strokes. Doctors have relied on beta blockers like atenolol as the gold standard for treating high blood pressure. But Cozaar outperformed atenolol in a study of over 9,000 people.
A new report in the journal Archives of Surgery contends that St. John's wort is dangerous for transplant patients. In the study, the patient's blood level of cyclosporin, a drug used to prevent organ transplant rejection, decreased by an average of 50% when the patients began taking St. John's wort. This could lead some patients to reject their transplants. The study underscores the importance of discussing the use of herbal supplements with your physician. This is Joe Graydon and the People's Pharmacy on the TalkStar Radio Network.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing the legacy of Chief Justice Rehnquist. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255. You can also comment on the blog at radioinsidescoop.com. I'm playing excerpts from Chief Justice Rehnquist's confirmation hearing that occurred back in 1986. The allegations that he tried to prevent black people from voting in the 60s went nowhere in 71 under Nixon. It was still a little too soon to that period, I think, for people to take them seriously. But in 1986, Ted Kennedy read witness after witness after witness. Rehnquist denies it, by the way. He denies it. I mean, he can't deny things like that he publicly testified against a bill that would have prohibited discrimination in public housing in Arizona. It was a local ordinance. Rehnquist, who had, by the way, restrictive covenants on his houses that would prevented their sale to blacks or Jews, I think or Jews, believed that the government had absolute right to discriminate in public housing. He argued against that. He also argued against the greatest civil rights decision of our time, Brown versus Board of Education. That was the decision that would have overturned that did overturn Plessy v. Ferguson, the 1896 decision that said that separate but equal is okay, that whites and blacks can be ordered to go to separate schools as long as the facilities are equal. 1954, the Supreme Court held unanimously that separate was no longer equal. Interestingly, at that time, Chief Justice Rehnquist was a clerk to Justice Jackson. And when asked about his memo to Justice Jackson, arguing strenuously that Plessy was the law and that the 14th Amendment that says you have equal protection under the laws did not apply to desegregating schools, when he was asked about that memo, he said, well, he was just writing down Jackson's views. Well, part of the problem with that, of course, as I've argued before, legal memos, you're not supposed to argue someone else's views. That's called a brief. But in a memo, you're supposed to give your own views. But there's an even stronger reason to think that Rehnquist was not telling the truth when he said that. Justice Jackson voted for Brown. Chief William Rehnquist argued against it. If he was giving Jackson's views, then why did the judge vote for Brown versus Board of Education? I want to get back to the allegations that Ted Kennedy gave in the nomination hearing, and then I'm happy to take your calls. 877-528-TALK. Let's just finish Ted Kennedy's list of the witnesses against Rehnquist, and Rehnquist's very clear denials of all this.
Oh, Dr. Smith.
I don't believe I do, no.
Mr. James Brosnahan, a prominent San Francisco attorney, former assistant U.S. attorney in Phoenix, has stated that on Election Day 1962, he received complaints of voter harassment at polling places. The complaints were that on Republican challengers were challenging voters on ground that they couldn't read. He went to a precinct with an FBI agent. You were sitting at a table where the voter challenger sits. A number of the people complained to Mr. Brosnahan that you had been challenging voters. You know Mr. Brosnahan?
Yes, I do.
Did you engage in any of these activities, Mr. Rehnquist?
Would you read me again what Mr. Brosnahan says that I did?
He said he went to a precinct with an FBI agent, and you were there sitting at a table where the voter challenger sits. And a number of people complained to Brosnahan that you had been challenging voters.
No, I don't think that's correct.
Well, or any of the other statements that were made that I read from the statements of individuals, correct?
No, I don't believe they are.
Now, I want you to think about this. In addition to the several black people that Rehnquist dismisses and says they're incorrect, he also dismisses a former U.S. attorney. Okay, now, I don't know if you know the standards, but the standard for U.S. attorney, which is basically a government prosecutor, they're pretty high. These are people who, and I know some U.S. attorneys, they have to lead pretty upstanding lives because their word is their bond. They are, it would be very unusual to find a U.S. attorney lying, but apparently that's what Rehnquist says he's doing. Let's just finish the testimony and then I'll get to your calls.
Wouldn't you remember something like that if it had happened?
I would think I would, yes.
Are all these witnesses wrong?
Well, Senator, I gave my best recollection in 71. I've reviewed that statement, and that stands as the best of my knowledge. So I suppose if they say I did something that I have said I didn't do, I would have to say, yes, they are wrong.
Well, why would the witnesses, do you think, make these statements, all of them, make these statements relatively similar in nature about your activity on Election Day? What is their motivation, do you think?
I really don't know.
Well, that gives you a feel. That gives you a feel. I do want to talk about Chief Justice Rehnquist's legacy and his opinions, but I just think it's important for you to know his past, or at least all these allegations of all these witnesses, which, unless they're all lying, which I guess Rehnquist says they are, in 1986, maybe we didn't, I don't know, maybe we gave the person the benefit of the doubt, the nominee, but it's interesting. Just, it's important, I think, to recognize the kind of practices that went on in the 60s, and that Justice Rehnquist, back when he was William Rehnquist, well, he practiced a lot of them. Let me go to the phones. Again, toll-free number is 877-528-TALK. Alice from Humboldt County, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark?
Yes, you're on the air.
I
don't know what people were thinking when they appoint judges like Rehnquist. Only good for rich racists. I also wanted to let you know that I am a real person. I'm not Dave.
I don't think you're Dave. You don't sound like Dave to me, Alice.
No, I've
never doubted that you were a real person.
Yeah, and he helps me sometimes, but I'm not Dave.
Okay, fair enough, and I never thought you were.
I'm a 91-year-old, retired RN.
A retired nurse?
Yeah.
Okay. And you probably remember in the 19—where are you from, Alice? Were you from California in the 1960s?
Yes.
You did?
Probably
California wasn't as bad as places like Arizona and some of the southern states, places where Rehnquist disqualified voters. I'm not sure if you can remember back in the 60s. Was there a lot of racism in California?
Well, I really liked it here. I couldn't see anything wrong.
Yeah, I think Humboldt County, Northern California, was always pretty ahead of the game in terms of racial relations.
Oh, yes. This is the best part.
Well, thank you very much for your call, Alice.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Have a good day. Yeah, bye-bye.
Goodbye. I do want to go back and talk more about Chief Justice Rehnquist's legacy. It's not, of course, just what he did before he became justice. It's really the things that he's done afterwards and the inconsistencies. Because you could argue that, okay, for example, you say you really believe in free speech. And Rehnquist is a foremost defender of free speech when it comes to tobacco companies. If tobacco companies want to advertise their drug that kills one-third of every user, if you smoke tobacco, you should, I assume you know this, but maybe you don't. I don't know. I realize nicotine is the most addictive drug known to man. But if you smoke tobacco, you're doing the equivalent of playing Russian roulette with two bullets in the six chambers because you have a one-third chance of the drug killing you and a two-thirds chance of your living. So, you know, you could roll the dice with your own life. But the point is that Rehnquist didn't believe that states could regulate that. He said, no, that's free speech under the First Amendment. The tobacco companies have a right to sell their product and to tell you all of the reasons you should buy their product. But when it comes to, say, burning a flag, when it comes to criticism of the U.S. government, he felt that he could prohibit you from burning a flag. So corporate speech for Chief Justice Rehnquist was more important than political speech. Many, many other decisions I want to get to when we come back. Toll-free number 877-528-TALK, 877-528-8255. We'll be right back after this.
I've been reading online about a drug-free home treatment program that suggests you can be asthma-free. It's a program designed by an ex-asthmatic who claims she cured her own asthma. It's based on a little-known but astounding clinical trial at a major hospital. What would you give to be free of asthma, asthma symptoms, and sinus and allergy symptoms, to breathe easily, freely, naturally, in a relaxed way? This drug-free method, proven by clinical trials, is guaranteed or you get your money back, and you have 90 days to decide. Get to a computer now and go to healthstarproducts.com. That's www.healthstarproducts.com. Read about the asthma program, and if it doesn't do what it says it'll do for you, you get your money back, and you've got 90 days to decide. Go to healthstarproducts.com. The most famous television documentary ever produced was Victory at Sea, which was as noted for the swelling musical score by Richard Rodgers as the amazing footage from World War II gathered from over 13,000 hours of footage from U.S., British, German, and Japanese navies. RetroTelevision.com offers you 26 episodes of Victory at Sea, stunningly reproduced on DVD for just $19.95. The original 26 episodes are presented uncut with every note of Richard Rodgers' original score for just $19.95. To take advantage of this offer, go online to www.retrotelevision.com. That's R-E-T-R-O, Retro Television, you got to spell out television.com. Or go to TalkStarRadio.com to get your set of Victory at Sea episodes for just $19.95. We'll be right back.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
In a recent press conference, George Bush talked about how he's got to fill that Chief Justice seat left by William Rehnquist when he died last weekend. He's got to fill it quickly because we need a Chief Justice and we don't have one. Well, that argument is at best disingenuous. It's not a real argument because the law says what happens when the Chief Justice dies or the seat is vacant. It says that the most senior justice becomes the acting Chief Justice. That person right now is John Paul Stevens, appointed by Gerald Ford in 1974. And John Paul Stevens was a moderate Republican, but of course Gerald Ford would be considered a real liberal today. The Republican Party has moved so far to the right that people like Gerald Ford definitely would be considered a liberal, and certainly John Paul Stevens is considered by the right wing to be a liberal, and so they've really got to fill that seat. But don't believe Bush when he says that, we really need a Chief Justice. We've got someone who's just fine. I'd be happy if Roberts takes a little bit of time, because I wouldn't mind Chief Justice Stevens, acting Chief Justice Stevens, serving in that capacity. There are a lot of different things to talk about with Rehnquist's legacy. Everything on states' rights, economics issues. Obviously, the most shameful is Bush v. Gore. Here you have Rehnquist argue his whole life that states' rights trump federal rights and that the Equal Protection Clause does very little. At the same time, when it's necessary to put in the president that would appoint his successor, George Bush, he violates 30 years of his own jurisprudence saying, the state of Florida has no right to decide its state law issues on determining electoral votes. And also the Equal Protection Clause, which doesn't apply to help black people, does apply to help George W. Bush. In an opinion that I have to say I have not found, and I would love for anyone who out there to find me, I have never found a single legal scholar anywhere in the country who can defend the logic of Bush v. Gore. There are people that says, I'm really glad Rehnquist stepped in extra-constitutionally and put Bush in power. All right, I understand that. You like Bush. You're glad that Rehnquist broke the law and put Bush in power. But even the Republicans can't defend that decision. And that legacy may be the one most remembered because that opinion was written by Rehnquist. It's unsigned. He wouldn't even sign his name to that disgusting opinion. No one did. Not a single judge did, but as the Chief Justice, Rehnquist wrote that opinion. Toll free, 877-528-TALK. Dave from Northern California, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, Mark, this is Dave. I'm Alice's buddy and also a real person. One of the things I was wondering in all the years that they've served together, how Rehnquist and Clarence Thomas must have... Thomas agrees with him on damn near everything, but... I wonder, do you have a clue as to whether or not he had animosity towards him for being...
I don't think Rehnquist... I don't believe that Rehnquist is a racist in the sense that he hates black people. I don't believe that. What I think is that Rehnquist understood, as many Republicans today understand, that blacks are overwhelmingly loyal to the Democratic Party. They cast some 90% of their vote for Democrats. And so he saw nothing wrong with trying to look at people on the basis of race in the 60s and say, there's a black person, there's a likely Democrat, let's make sure that he can't vote. You know, to the extent that extremely rare exception comes, in Clarence Thomas, a person who votes against his racial interests, I'm sure Rehnquist welcomes the man.
I'm just curious to know that, because I got the feeling from some of his statements that he actually was quite racial, didn't like black people, didn't like being around them or whatever. But.
Well, he's done things, he's been seen singing sort of, certain melodies that are, let's say, racial, they're things like that. But I'd rather judge the man on what he actually did while he was in office. And we know, for example, that he did not believe that Bob Jones University could be denied a tax exemption merely by the fact that they openly discriminated on the basis of race. Now, on this one, every other justice disagreed with him. But he felt that, I think that's right. I need to check the Bob Jones case. Maybe Scalia and Thomas agree with him, but I don't think so. As I recall, I think it was before Thomas, that's why. But he felt that Bob Jones had a right to discriminate. And one of the interesting things on this score is that here in 1964 and in 1954, he argued that you have a right to discriminate. That, in other words, it was unconstitutional to require desegregation in public schools, to require desegregation in public housing. But then, once that became the law of the land, when it came to affirmative action, which is favorable discrimination, if you will, discriminating in favor of the former victims, in favor of blacks, then he argued for a colorblind standard. So this inconsistency is very interesting. He didn't believe in colorblindness when they were discriminating against black people. But when you're discriminating against white people, arguably, then he switched sides and supported colorblindness and was always firmly against affirmative action. So it's interesting. You can discriminate against blacks in Rehnquist's world, but you dare not discriminate against whites. And he was very consistent. He also, by the way, supported discrimination against women. He very much opposed the Equal Rights Amendment. And, Dave, I don't know what you're doing, but thank you for your call there. Or maybe that may have been my producer. In any case, he was very consistent in his discrimination practices. He also, by the way, supported the right of the federal government to invade people's privacy. Now, the most obvious, of course, is in Roe v. Wade. People talk about the abortion decision. He was one of only two dissenters there. But it wasn't just that. It was also in privacy laws. As much as the federal government couldn't, Rehnquist believed, give you things like Social Security and child labor laws and environmental regulation. He felt that was overreaching by the government. He didn't feel it was overreaching for the government to invade your privacy, specifically for the government to tell you how to have sex. Rehnquist believed that government laws requiring people under penalty of going to prison not to have oral sex. Remember, in 13 states, including the state of Virginia, it was illegal for even married couples to have oral sex. Chief Justice Rehnquist says that's perfectly fine. The government can tell you what kind of sex to have, but it can't regulate your environment. That was Rehnquist's world. We'll be right back right after this.
You like to work less, spend more time with your family, and make more money than you have ever dreamed of. Now you can. Cindy is a mother of three beautiful children and used to clean houses for a living to make ends meet. She found out about EasyBiz23.com. Her first month full-time, she earned $2,500. Her income increased about $1,000 per month, and now she earns $16,000 a month. Tori says before she started her own business, she worked 10 hours a day in a high-pressure job. She wore out her car commuting back and forth to work. Now she makes over $100,000 a year in her pajamas. Go online to find out more at EasyBiz23.com. Order a free, no-obligation work-from-home training package. Shipping not included. That's www.EasyBiz23.com. Tracy, a restaurant manager who came home to be a full-time mom, made $1,000 her first month and was earning $5,000 a month just 6 months in the business. Get free information now. Log on to EasyBiz23.com. That's EasyBiz, the number 23.com.
When you're weary.
In times of trouble, in times of crisis, the American Red Cross is there, providing shelter, a warm meal, a helping hand. Victims of disasters need your help now. Your support for the American Red Cross Disaster Relief Fund makes help possible. Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org today.
Over troubled water, I will lay me down. When you're weary.
In times of trouble, in times of crisis, the American Red Cross is there, providing shelter, a warm meal, a helping hand. Victims of disasters need your help now. To find out how you can help, contact the American Red Cross today. Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org today.
Over troubled water, I will lay me down.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
It's very difficult to take the legacy of a justice of the Supreme Court who served for 35 years and died last week, Chief Justice William Rehnquist. And to distill it down in 1 hour or 40 minutes, which is all we have on radio, I'm doing my best. I'm just going to try in the last few minutes to cover some of the other parts of his legacy. Chief Justice Rehnquist believed very much in strengthening the right of the president, particularly Republican presidents. We saw, for example, when George Bush argued he had a right to pick up any American citizen and hold him or her, it's always been him so far, but hold that American citizen indefinitely without trial, without charging them. We found Rehnquist said that's okay, no problem. Just pick them up. Don't worry about the Fourth, Fifth, Sixth Amendments of the Constitution. And he defended the president's practice in Guantanamo Bay. It's interesting that when Bill Clinton was president, Rehnquist was not so solicitous, so kind to the president of the United States. When Bill Clinton was president, he supported private lawsuits like Paula Jones' lawsuit against Bill Clinton. He also supported the right of independent counsels to investigate the president. He did not support those rights, though, when they occurred under Reagan or Bush Sr. He supported states' rights, as I said, generally. Certainly states' rights to discriminate were important to him, but not states' rights to determine who can vote for president if that right could allow Al Gore to become president. He believed that religion, government could instill religion. He had no problem with that. And he also wanted to make government immune from citizen suits. Again, the exception being Paula Jones or the Bush v. Gore case. But generally, government, he felt, should be immune. They should be able to break laws with impunity. Chief Justice Rehnquist believed very much in that. He also believed in fighting against criminal defendants. Even if they had DNA proof that they weren't the rapist, they weren't the murderer, Chief Justice Rehnquist thinks you get your one day in court. And even if you can prove 100% that you're innocent, too late. Too late, you had your day in court. He did not believe in reopening those cases. What's, I think, most clear from the legacy of Chief Justice Rehnquist is that he was never consistent on any principle, whether it be states' rights or free speech or federal power or president's power. He was never consistent, but instead always consistently, just about consistently, voted to help Republicans, to help conservatives, to harm liberals, to harm Democrats. In so, he's one of the most political justices of our time. Never, ever would be seen, almost never, to vote against his side. And if you ever doubt that, the clearest case of all, of course, is Bush v. Gore, where he violated 30 years of arguing for states' rights in order to say that Florida could not determine, the Florida Supreme Court, which is under Florida law, the final ruling in Florida State Court, could not determine where its own electoral votes went. So this is a judge who is very much result-oriented, didn't like reason, like those conservatives that don't like to have someone on the other side on their radio show. He didn't like arguing. He didn't like giving reasons. He said, this is the way it is. I have the power. I control. And very much that is his legacy. It's a legacy of pure power, a legacy of saying, I'm in charge here. I have the power. I'll do what I want. And it's a shame, really, because one thing about, say, Justice Scalia, and I don't like Scalia's politics either, but he does feel an urge to defend what he does. He does think that he has to back up what he does. Not Justice Rehnquist. No, Justice Rehnquist, the man who was presiding over the Clinton impeachment trial per the Constitution, the guy who put stripes on his robes, which he got from a Gilbert and Sullivan play because he wanted to be seen as different from the other justices who only wore black. This is a